everybody. This is Corey with the Nerdy Times. With me always is Dan.
Yay!
And welcome to our 100th...
The ultimate episode.
The ultimate episode.
Of your new monthly podcast.
Okay. It's been a while since we've done this. We were trying to come up with something a little more interesting.
And we failed.
For the 100th episode, but getting everybody's schedules in order and trying to get everybody to sit down for a mega podcast was daunting. Everybody's got a lot of stuff going on in their life, and... It didn't work out, so Dan and I are just going to be here, as it always is, bringing
as
you...
As it should be.
Bringing you what we do.
What is it that we do?
We sit here and we talk, Dan.
Oh. Is that why I came over here?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I was promised booze.
No, there's no booze today.
Damn it. All right. So Corey, let's just, you know, so we have reached 100 episodes.
Yep. What has started off as a once a week article blog on the Game Nights website turned into a podcast segment, then turned into its own podcast, turned us into the internet sensations that
we are
today.
Known wide and far and deep.
It has brought us elbow to elbow with celebrities, scientists, and everyone else.
The huddled masses.
And the journey has brought us
so Corey, have you,
to
have
this
you,
100
that's right.
mile milestone.
So have you ever done anything else 100 times?
I can't say those things on the air.
Oh, really?
But I hit that 100th anniversary probably 2 days, 3 days into
We need to gossip later after the show.
I don't think you want to know anything about
that. Oh, I think I do.
Oh, that's pretty disgusting. Anyway.
Screeching halt.
Yeah, where are we going to start today? I think I'm going to start with the last thing I posted on Facebook, which was...
Okay, you can legally talk about that?
Yeah. I posted a thing basically saying that I am done with Batman.
Oh, God.
And this has absolutely nothing to do with Ben Affleck.
Really?
Everybody is completely pissed off with Ben Affleck.
Is it about that kid dressed in the little Batman costume?
No.
See, it's not that either.
I'm completely okay. With your kid wanting to be Batman.
All right.
I'm completely okay with certain aspects of Batman. However, basically since the Christopher Nolan films, there has been this buildup of Batman where... Every time that you see anything about him, it's like this guy gets off with more year one stories and more hype that he is the most badass character in the DC universe, but then also has the Achilles heel or the understrength, or I don't know how you want to even describe it, of being just a normal guy who has some gadgets and is really smart. So he has been built up to this point where it's just like he can outthink and outsmart every superhero in the Justice League and take them out and just be a normal guy. So that's Superman, that's Shazam, that's Wonder Woman. These are people who can lift mountains and, you know, have magical abilities and superpowers, and they can move a billion times faster than Batman. You know, you have the Flash, who can literally travel near speeds of light, and you're telling me that Batman is going to have the ability to take him out. You know, oh, my washing machine is...
Yeah, I know. I was like, oh, Corey, we're lifting off.
So anyway, I can give you the
warp
fact
speed,
that,
Mr. Sulu,
that he can he's a brilliant tactician, that he's the world's greatest detective, that he is all these things. However, the guy needs to be leveled off.
Yeah,
he is. And
so let me ask: is this a symptom of like a character that becomes super popular? Like Batman, I think arguably Batman is now the superhero right now.
Oh yeah,
you know, his movies have done the best.
You can take, you know, all the Marvel Avengers as their individuals, and as the Avengers movie itself. The Avengers is by far probably the most popular super movie to ever happen.
Yeah.
However, Batman, as a solo franchise, I think, peaked higher than any of the others with, like, The Dark Knight. You know,
and
the Joker.
Batman, okay, now I may have
but
to
But you
turn
also
in.
Have to wonder, to some degree, would The Dark Knight have been... his biggest success as it was had Heath Ledger not died. There was some you know, there's some morbid draw to wanting to see an actor's final performance or whatever, and what he brought to this role, and, you know, there's a lot of romance that can be tagged to it, because, you know, because he was one of these actors that really got into the roles.
Mm-hmm.
The same could be said when, like, Brandon Lee died making The Crow.
Yeah, The Crow.
The Crow just blew up. Everybody, you know, I don't know that Crow would have been such a big film. I mean, it was a decent film, you know, and I enjoyed it, but I don't know.
If it wouldn't have had the lingering cultural thing, you know, where he had to make all the extras.
He was killed making it, you know, he was shot.
The urban legends that are around that movie are crazy.
But all those things with Batman aside, it's like, you know, I love Batman the Animated Series. I liked, you know, Justice League cartoon. I liked the dark, you know, the new Christopher Nolan movies. I wasn't a big fan of The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
I really feel that there was no Batman in it at all.
I didn't even see, like, even based on the previews, I'm like, I don't know if I want to see this movie.
Well, it's crazy, because at the end of the Dark Knight, he basically said he is going to as Batman, because he is Batman, he's going to take the heat of Harvey Dent's death and all this stuff, and he is, you know, he is going to basically eventually rise above it.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, he's gonna run, and you guys are gonna hunt him, and he's still gonna do what he's gonna do. And then in the third movie, I guess it was a short chase because he retired. He was beat up. He was broken.
Mm-hmm.
He's walking around with, you know, limping. And I'm like, what happened to the chase? What happened to the thing? And the police, you know, it's like everybody gave up and they just made Harvey Dent Day.
I was like,
okay, whatever. So, but, you know, with now the anticipation of the Batman Superman movie that's coming out, you know, there is naturally going to be the expectation that these two are going to butt heads.
Yeah.
There's a really funny clip online where the guys over at College Humor have done Batman and Superman together.
Mm-hmm.
And if you haven't seen that yet, it's worth watching, because they basically bring up all the things where it's like Superman in the clip is really just trying to appeal to Batman that they shouldn't be at odds, that they should team up, and that, you know, together they would be a you know, thing. And, like, Batman, if you've ever seen any of the College Humor, he's, like, a real dork and kind of an idiot. And they make some good fun of it. But the movie itself, I didn't think that the new guy that played Superman did such a bad job in this new movie. I didn't think the movie was that great. There was a lot of stuff that I didn't dislike the movie. I'd definitely watch it. But there's a lot of stuff that, you know, I felt it kind of gone better. And with them bringing Batman into it, Zack Snyder has now said that it's going to be kind of an older, more seasoned Batman.
Okay.
And it's going to be Ben Affleck. And I thought that was kind of a strange choice.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, you know,
yeah, we're just going to have to see. I think we had this discussion the other night, you know.
You know, when in the 80s, when you know, I'd have been, like, knowing that Michael Keaton, who was Mr. Mom?
Yeah, would you have thought Mr. Mom could have been Batman?
Or Beetlejuice was going to be Batman? Everybody was kind of like, what? But he did a really good job.
Yeah.
You know, in that first Batman movie, I went back and I watched it. He did a very good job. He played a very eccentric kind of Bruce Wayne, and he played a very decent Batman, in my opinion. The second movie kind of is where that series just kind of starts going downhill. I don't really care for any of the others that much. But that first movie, he really did a really great job. And he's only in the first two. So, but it's just like, you know, when I watch Daredevil, and this is probably going to piss some people off, like, screw this podcast. I watched the Daredevil movie. I don't know hardly anything about the character. I know he has the bat-like vision, you know, because he's blinded by the chemicals.
The sound
chemicals.
Vision.
And I just watched the movie the other night, and I had not seen it in a couple of years, and I was like, let me see if this movie was just kind of it was, you know, it just had a shine because I was, you know, just wanting to see a superhero movie. Still, to me, it was not a bad movie. But I don't know all the characters.
Yeah,
history.
and that's the thing for me too with that movie. It's like I actually liked it.
I didn't think it was bad.
And I think it's because I don't know anything about Daredevil. I don't have a horse in the race. You know,
I looked up and I found this guy who wrote a very big article about the comparisons of the Daredevil comic to the movie. And the things that he brought up was that the reason that he didn't like the movie had nothing to do with the casting of all the characters, with the exception of Ben Affleck. He says because Ben Affleck can only, in his opinion, could only act when he's standing next to Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
And I'm like, you know, I watched that movie, and I don't really get that. You know, Ben Affleck is not the most powerful actor.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not ever, like, sitting there moved to tears or enthralled by a performance, but, you know, he gets on well enough.
Well, maybe they'll cast Matt Damon as Robin.
No, they've already said they're not. And Matt Damon has said that he's not doing Robin. But
damn,
you know, his complaints with the movie were not in any particular thing that was not linked to who Daredevil was as a character, with the exception of at one he said he made kind of a point that he says Daredevil was never in that movie portrayed as a hero. He said he was portrayed as a vigilante. Okay. And I was like, well, kind of all heroes are that way.
Yeah, isn't that kind of how it is, you know?
You know, but what he was saying is, like, in the comic books, when Matt Murdock lost his sight, he was pushing an old man out of the way of a truck, rescuing him from being hit. The truck wrecks, splashes radioactive chemicals in his face, he gets superpowers. In this movie, his father, who is working for the mob, was beating someone up, and he had lied to his son about being part of that.
Yeah.
His son runs away upset, almost gets hit by a forklift carrying radioactive chemicals. It crashes, he gets splashed in the face, and Luke gets his powers. So there was a, he said, right there, you're taking something away from the heroism of the character. And I'm like, okay, I can see that, you know. But he, and they said when he's with Elektra on the rooftop, they said he hears somebody getting attacked with a super hearing, but she's like, stay with me. Which is something that they kind of basically said that he'd never done with any other woman.
Yeah.
Okay. Because they're like, where do you go in the middle of the night? He had his answering machine playing at one point where it's like, where do you go in the middle of the night? It's 3 a.m. You know, and you never stay with me all night. He's letting him know that he never cared enough about anybody else to want to, because this draw. But they were basically complaining in this movie that there wasn't enough of a connection between Daredevil and Elektra built up on screen for there to be this chemistry. To
justify him letting some poor guy get the shit kicked out of him.
And I'm like, okay, you have to split hairs at some point where it's like, okay, him not wanting, him basically being persuaded to stay with her meant that there was more emotion that he felt towards her. And I was like, you know, I kind of, you know, the biggest complaint I had about that movie was her big fight in the playground.
Yeah.
So I'm getting way off track from my Batman
diatribe. Just like statement. Normal.
Yeah, it's just being train wrecked. But anyway, there are big complaints with the movie were in the fact that Ben Affleck can't act, and the relationship between him and Elektra was not right.
Yeah.
Like, it was not well developed.
Okay.
And they said, and there they go, you know, but other than that, it was just, I was like, well, it sounds like it was kind of right, you know?
Yeah.
But Daredevil, and they go, the Daredevil's biggest problem was always he was a second tier character, and then he was like a poor man Spider-Man, basically. Yeah. So, when you basically, when we get back on track, it's like we get back to where Batman's at. Batman is not the poor version of anybody.
Yeah.
Batman is
the guy.
Is the guy in DC. If you think of DC Comics, you think of Superman, and you think of Batman. Everybody else is a second tier, no matter how badass they are. There are so many characters in DC Comics who are on par with Batman or Superman, but nobody holds a candle to those two particular characters. You know, and so you're going to put them on screen, and it's like, I'm almost dreading the concept of it being an older Batman, because that just means he's going to basically be schooling Superman on everything. And it's like, you know, and
So do you think this is going to be a case of like, oh, you got chocolate in my peanut butter, it's going to be awesome? Or is it going to be like two things that are awesome separately but together? Like, you know, I really like custard and okay. I really like cheeseburgers, but I don't want cheeseburger custard.
There are some foregone conclusions about this movie mm-hmm. that are going to happen, and there are some things that
tell us, Corey.
Are in the air. The foregone conclusion is that this film is going to be an absolute financial hit.
Yeah.
Financially speaking, this movie is going to make its money regardless whether or not it is the biggest piece of shit superhero mm-hmm. film to ever hit the screen, or if it is the most amazing superhero film to ever hit the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Because just of the merging of Superman and Batman. It's never been done before on film. Yep. In the theater, it's been done, you know, of course,
on television, comic books and whatever,
but it's never been. And with the popularity of the Avengers, they mm-hmm. want it now. It was one of the biggest things at Comic-Con a few mm-hmm. months ago. I posted that thing where it was like, listen to the sound of a nerdgasm.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, and when the whole hall erupts with just the symbol of Batman and Superman mm-hmm. being put together. And there's been nothing but talk about it online, and you read about stuff, and you read about Ben Affleck being offered the role, and they're talking about cameos and setting up other characters through this film, like Wonder Woman and Nightwing
and
all this other kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, what they're wanting to do is build the Justice League in a similar way that Marvel has built
mm-hmm.
to
individual movies compiling up into
combo. However... And I think that this is, in their world, it is smarter because, you know, Marvel basically started with a second tier character. Mm-hmm. They took Iron Man, who by all means in the comics has always been known as Old Buckethead,
mm-hmm.
and they put him out there in a movie, and Robert Downey Jr. really sold the character, and everybody liked it, and then they were like, we're gonna go balls deep, we're going to just mm-hmm. roll the dice, and we're going to set up an Avengers hook at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
And then they did Hulk, and Hulk was fairly well done. I know a lot of people had issues with it, but
yeah,
I thought the Incredible Hulk movie that was not the Ang Lee version was pretty well done. Yeah. You know, then they really had a hurdle with Thor. Mm-hmm. Thor is one of those magical god characters, mm-hmm. and how are you going to handle that? I thought Thor was pretty well handled.
I liked Thor. Yeah.
He's one of those characters that a lot of people are just like, whatever.
Whatever, he's got a hammer. He's cool.
Yeah, and then they did Captain America. Another tough... Yeah. Just in his look. It's a tough character to bring to the screen. They did a good job.
Yeah. Well, I think there is like the trick was keeping him in the time frame he was from.
Right.
Keeping him in that mm-hmm. World War II time frame. Now... The interesting thing is going to be, you know, for Winter Soldier when he's in modern times, right. how well is that still going to play?
And I think it's, from what I've seen with the trailer that just came out, it's going to play pretty interestingly because, you know, he's come from a war that I think most people would think was a good thing that we were mm-hmm. a part of, and now it's like...
The good war.
Yeah, and we fought the good fight, and mm-hmm. now it's... You know, we've been involved in things that have been questionable,
mm-hmm.
and his character is very moral,
mm-hmm.
and so there's going to be some interesting play with that. But, you know, there were two characters that wound up in Avengers that did not basically have much play mm-hmm. in any other movies. They brought in Black Widow and Iron Man 2,
uh-huh.
and she was just a bit part.
Yeah.
And they brought in Hawkeye and Thor for just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know... Just to let you know that they were in the universe mm-hmm. and that they were going to be in Avengers. So now you're like, all right. And then when they bring Avengers to the screen, they're all going to be there mm-hmm. and it's going to work out. It's kind of what they need to do, except, in my opinion, they don't have four characters to really work with.
Uh-huh.
They've tried Green Lantern.
Yep.
Which people hated.
Yeah, it was too much of a comedy.
Yeah, in that, in my opinion, I didn't hate the movie. People are going to hate me for saying that.
Man, but, you're just alienating everyone.
I know, I'm alienating everyone. I didn't think it was probably the best representation of the character or anything like that, but I thought it was entertaining enough. Ryan Reynolds needed to be the Flash. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The Flash has a lot more humor into his character. So, but they tried it with Green Lantern, but they didn't try and build him into this universe at all, like the Nolanverse, which is kind of how they want to basically set up their world, which is a bit grittier a take on things. And I'm not necessarily sure that that isn't what it needs to be. However, with Batman and Superman, you need to basically, you do need to bring in the second, you need to bring in the rest of the Justice League in their films as secondary characters. People will probably argue that Wonder Woman needs to have her own movie.
Yeah.
Yes and no. Outside of the 70s television show, she's never been successfully really translated to anything other than the Justice League cartoon.
Yeah.
She, you know, she is a girl in a bustier and underpants.
Yeah.
You know, flying around either in an invisible jet or of her own accord with a magical lasso, you know, a boomerang tiara and gauntlets that can deflect bullets.
Yeah.
She's a hard sale.
She needs a little bit of work. And she's the same thing like Thor.
Right.
You know, mainly Thor has at least has like, you know, a background in Norse mythology you can kind of pull from, where Wonder Woman, I think they've tried to like track her back to like Amazonian.
Well, she comes from this mystical Amazonian island called Themyscira, yeah, and it's not to as the Greek well gods,
known. Yeah,
and all that kind of stuff. And she gets exiled from that world, similar in the way I guess that Thor did. But unlike Thor, she still has her powers.
We need to get her and Thor together.
Yeah, and she also has a sword.
Yeah,
is like one of the few weapons in the world that can hurt Superman. They say it many times that it's sharp enough to carve the electrons off an atom. You know, it's got that kind of an edge. Yeah, it's pretty badass. It'd be great for carving turkey this year.
I know. It's Thanksgiving's coming up. I need to get that for Turkey Day.
So, but you know, they have all these different characters they need to bring in. Green Lantern's going to be part of the Justice League movie, from what I understand. I don't know if they're going to put Aquaman in the movie. He's one of their iconic characters, but he is a character that has not weathered well. And it's like one of those characters where it's like, when I was a kid, I thought it'd be kind of cool to be Aquaman. Yeah. I was like, all right, you know, because I love to go to the pool and everything. Uh-huh. I could swim all day. You know,
I would never have to go to the pool.
Yeah, I like Aquaman. I would never have to come up for air, and I could talk to all the fish and have them attack people. Or when I go to the beach and I could ride around on a dolphin. You know,
your childhood
as a 5 year old being Aquaman would be fun.
Oh my god!
You know, you could have Jaws was big when I was a kid. It was like you could have a shark, you know, chasing people down. You could have killer whales. It would have been amazing.
So, you ever heard the song by Jonathan Colton? But the Aquaman.
Yeah.
As you described that, I that song is playing through my head.
However, like when you, so what they've done now is they've made him like the master of the sea, and he's hydrokinetic, so he can control water.
And kind of a Poseidon type character, more than just he communes with the fishies.
Yeah, he's you know, because basically if you have Aquaman walking around the streets of New York City or Metropolis or
with
wherever else,
and his weird scaly,
you know,
scaly
unless
pants.
He's got like a tank with a land shark in it that he can communicate, you know,
there's a Futurama episode that comes to mind too.
He can scream to the fishies all he wants to. They're not going to pop out of the sewer.
Well, you know, there's alligators down there, you know, in the sewer.
But he's very strong, so you're kind of like, okay. And he can control water, which, you know,
okay. There's water everywhere,
you know. But other than that, you know, it's like, I don't know. You know, it's like, so are they going to pull him in? In the new Justice League comics, they brought in Cyborg. Who was in the Teen Titans cartoon. He's also a real character in their comic book series. Would they bring him in? Would they do the Black Green Lantern?
Yeah.
You know, to give some color.
Some diversity to the world here.
Yeah, some diversity, some color to what would be a drastically white crowd.
Yeah.
You have Martian Manhunter, who is a staple of the Justice League,
and he was really good. That was a really good character in the cartoon. Mainly, everything I know is from the Justice League cartoon.
Well, the Justice League cartoon does a very, very good job of bringing in a lot of little things from the comics and that sort of kind of stuff. And one of the things about Martian Manhunter is he's one of the characters who can completely whip Superman's ass.
Yeah.
He's stronger than Superman. He's just in everything, you know. Yeah. He's pretty badass. Which I'd love to see how, you know, Batman thinks he's going to take him down if Martian Manhunter really wants to come for him. It's just, all these characters have to be brought in.
5 minutes. All right, go.
Go.
So what were we discussing?
We were just discussing, like, who else that could possibly be in the Justice League. There's Hawkgirl or Hawkman. If you wanted to bring another woman into the Justice League mix, would you bring them in? I mean, they're characters that I know very little about. In the cartoon, they were alien. In the comics, there's a lot of Egyptian mythos, I think, linked to them. They got the Flash, who I think is definitely supposed to be a part of it.
Yeah,
and he, to me, is one of the characters that could be the strongest third solo type character, because his costume isn't so utterly ridiculous. You know, maybe you do a Flash Wonder Woman film or something. I don't know.
Just don't Flash
Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Do the two words together really?
I don't know.
Is a lot of imagery.
There's a joke there. Yeah. There too.
Aquawoman. Yeah. I don't know.
So we say that the Superman Spider-Man movie is going to lead to good things.
Superman Spider-Man movie.
Sorry,
that would
Spider-Man.
Be amazing.
Yeah.
But Disney is getting probably to the point where they could buy.
Well, they just own everyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they'll throw. Yeah. But Superman movie is that going to lead to good things, or are we just like circling the toilet?
If Zack Snyder can get away from these ridiculously long, huge action set pieces and bring a little more story to the movie, and basically develop these characters a little more and try and just make things a little more cohesive, because you're going to need to have relationships in order for it to go forward on a Justice League, and you're going to need to develop the universe, and you can't just do that by blowing stuff up. So, and
maybe
he's a capable director of telling a story, so...
Because that was the real strength of Joss Whedon, be able to bring all those things together.
He brought in all the character to those characters.
Yeah.
He brought on other little quirks, and he also brought in all the fan service with all the things you wanted to see when they fought in New York.
And he is really good at like strong ensemble
pieces. Yeah,
what Corey said. Yeah,
yeah. You know, he's written X-Men before. I don't know if he's ever written Avengers, but he's very good at basically playing off the characters' individual relationships and personality styles. And then he's also very good at the fan service moments where it's just the things, it's like, oh, there it is. Like, you know, all those scenes in New York City at the end where the characters are fighting alongside each other and, you know, all that stuff is just all the stuff you want to see. You know, and I can't think that Avengers 2 is not going to be just more of that.
So are we hoping that Zach, what was, who's
Zach
directing
Snyder
this?
Zack Snyder is directing the Batman Superman.
Do we think
Superman
he's going to be able to pull off something like that?
I really don't know.
What is the last thing he's directed? I know.
Man of Steel.
Oh, what did he direct before that?
Remember
Batman 1000.
he directed the Owl Guardians movie. The 3D Guardians movie.
I probably haven't seen anything that he's
he
done.
He did Sucker Punch.
Okay.
Which
I heard was interesting. I didn't see that either.
It was kind of an interesting movie, but that's where he... Basically, where he's known for his stylized action pieces, which is not a bad thing. He does very good at it. However, I found myself getting bored watching Sucker Punch because it would just get into these incredibly long dream sequences with these girls fighting all this craziness. And they'd go on for, God, it felt like 10, 15 minutes sometimes. And you're just like, all right, I don't care. Just shoot more guns. Sure, whatever. You know, jump, flip.
Make stuff happen.
Yeah. It just became to the point where you're just was like, ugh. And I just didn't care anymore.
Yeah.
And that's... He can get to that point. And that's kind of... It was starting to get that way in this new Man of Steel movie. It was like... He'd set up these character moments, and you'd see some stuff building and all that stuff. And you're like, okay. And then he'd get into this huge action sequence, and the action sequence would just go on too long. Especially towards the end.
Yeah.
But I think he's capable. And Ben Affleck, I think if he's going to be part of the movie, I think they are also going to bring him in as something of a directorial advisor.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not imagine him not being so, being is that he's, you know, he just did Argo.
Yeah.
And, you know, that one would be one Best Picture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's been a very accomplished director.
Yeah.
So I really think that he could, you know, the two of them could really bring together a great story.
Mm-hmm.
So, at the end of the day, I think that's the
so when is this thing coming out?
Same year that Avengers is coming out.
Next year?
2015.
2 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're filming it now.
1 year, but yeah, we're at the end of 2013, yeah. So yeah, it's basically going to be...
Avengers goes into production in early next year, like January or February next year. And one of the other things, and it was one of the things I did post on Nerdy Times, was them talking about Adam Driver possibly being Nightwing.
Oh, interesting.
Or not Nightwing, or being approached to be Dick Grayson.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
In this new movie, in which, I, to my knowledge, and I'm completely not calling myself knowledgeable on this, but Nightwing is not a Justice League guy. He's he's got his own team.
Yeah.
He's semi-Daredevil-esque.
Mm-hmm.
He used to be Robin. He was the first Robin. But they were talking about having him in there, and they were talking about having this guy, Adam Driver, play Nightwing, or Dick Grayson. So I was like, oh. And so I always want to see who they envision. Yeah. And they had probably posted the worst picture of this guy you could ever hope to see. His hair was kind of long and straight on top and kind of curly towards down his shoulders. And his face was just not in the right position, and he's very horse face is completely the way he looked.
That's bad.
And you're just like, oh, I mean, it was like, you know, picture like Mona Lisa hair,
type of deal.
It was really, really bad. Yeah. You're just like, wow, that's what you're thinking about. And then I saw an interview with him today where they asked him about it, and I watched the interview, and the guy doesn't look as bad as that picture made him out to be.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, I totally love to be in this movie. He goes, but nobody's ever approached me. He goes, so if you find out that I'm in this movie, let me know. It'll be news. You know, so...
Which is how a lot of this stuff happens. Yeah. Names get bantered about, and then, yeah.
So, so that was a little bit of rumor news for this movie, but there is a lot of other rumors going around where they're talking about it. I guess staying into the movie news, saw the new Thor movie.
Woo!
Yeah. Joe and Brian and my son and I we all went to go see it, and it was entertaining.
Okay.
I don't really think it was quite as good as the first movie.
Ooh, yeah.
And in the regard that it was, the plot was fairly disjointed. They really kind of used a little bit of a stronger villain. This villain was just kind of...
Who was the villain?
He was a dark elf guy.
But he was played by
Christopher Eccleston.
Oh.
And you would have never recognized Christopher Eccleston.
He's keep that in mind for later.
He's completely stark white.
Yeah.
His hair is all pulled back, and he's, you know, he's speaking in an dark elvish language through most of the movie. There's a couple scenes where he does speak, but he's got a really rich accent, and you don't really recognize that it's him except in little pieces. But the movie had a lot of fun action in it, and there's some humor, and, you know, the movie really, I guess, kind of picks up its strength when Thor and Loki get together. In my opinion, it's like Loki's really become the underdog strength of the Thor movie.
Okay. So
it's like, I like Thor as a character, but he works better when he's with other people.
Okay.
On his own, he's just not been developed enough to be a character of real depth. So Loki is a nice bit of personality to throw into that situation.
Okay.
But other than that, if you're interested, if you know, most people I think are interested in all the upcoming Marvel films, and they're also building towards the Infinity Gauntlet. In this, they basically refer to the Tesseract, as one of the Infinity Gems.
Okay,
and I don't know if we know anything about the Infinity
Gem.
And I guess this new power that was in this movie got kind of trapped or something. But at the end, several of the Asgardians go to this guy known as the Collector, and they hand him over this little box, and they said it's the second of the Infinity Gems.
Mm.
and they're trying to basically keep them separate in order to keep people from having all the power.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of interesting. Thanos was teased at the end of the first Avengers movie, and I know the next Avengers movie is going to be Age of Ultron,
mm-hmm.
which is not going to have Thanos in it. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, hopefully they get to build up to this big. You know, they're out there, they're teasing bigger things as they go.
Right.
Hopefully things still keep going well and they can get there, and it's not like 3 or 4 years down the road, everything loses steam, some executive gets fired, and then you're like, well, oh well.
Well, what they're now talking about is they were talking about on Netflix. Netflix has greenlit 4 separate Marvel superhero series. They're going to be 13 episode series, and they're going to be, one of them is going to be a Daredevil series.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one. She has just like a Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
Who is I read about her. I've never heard of her, really.
Yeah.
But she's some superhero girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to do Luke Cage.
Okay.
And Iron Fist.
Okay.
Who've always been kind of together. They're martial arts kind of superheroes with powers and things. And once those series kind of run their gauntlet, you know, their 13 episodes to kind of building those characters. Mm-hmm. They're going to try and bring all those characters together for a Defenders film.
Yeah. Okay.
And I don't know if the film is going to be just released as a miniseries on Netflix, or if they're actually going to try and bring it to a theatrical release. But they're really kind of wanting to start developing these properties in other formats and everything else and other media. So that sounds pretty interesting. I'd be very interested to see kind of a Netflix original series with these particular characters.
Ooh. Cool.
So
there you go.
Yep.
So Doctor Who?
Yep, that is also another big thing.
A Doctor Who who's only hit a 50th anniversary, not like us who have hit 100.
Yeah, well, this is 100 episodes, Dan.
What?
Doctor Who's had more than 100 episodes.
No. Yeah. All the internet tells me they're hitting their 50th anniversary. It's half of us.
Okay, Dan, we've been doing it for about 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
When we have 45 more years of Nerdy Times podcast, we will have a 50th anniversary, Dan.
Oh. I don't like you that much.
Yeah. I doubt either of us will be alive and talking at that point.
Yeah, well, I plan on living forever. See, I don't know about you.
I'll be 85 years old.
Wow, that'll be awesome podcast. We can start talking about our colostomy bags. Yeah. It'll be great.
We'll be right next to each other in the old folks' home.
Yeah, and Joe.
Yeah, Joe will be rigging everything together.
Yeah,
getting great. Us free galactic cable.
The galactic cable, that's right.
Whatever is coming out of
the
that
brain,
point.
The brain slugs will be firmly attached. Yeah. Or we'll be good to go. So if you want to watch the 50th anniversary show of Doctor Who and you want to see it at the movie theater, is it Phantom Events?
Fathom Events.
Fathom Events is doing a showing at a lot of movie theaters around the country.
Yep.
And if you have not gotten your tickets, you should hurry up and do so, because I know the 3D showings are all sold out around St. Louis, and the 2D showings are probably getting close to being sold out.
Yeah. I haven't bought my tickets yet. I haven't gone down to my local theater to see.
Yeah, you should probably go down there and see.
Yeah,
at least when you do it online, they're saying a lot of places are sold out.
Wow. Yeah, I'd like to see it, but I know next weekend is the actual when they're doing the huge simulcast.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's like everything's getting released. Like if you have cable, which is a problem for Corey and I, we don't have cable. That you, if you're watching BBC America, if you're in America, and, you know, BBC in Britain, and CBC in Canada, and Australian broadcasting, they're showing it all over the country, all over the world.
At the same time. In the central time zone is showing it like 1:15.
Yeah.
Well, one of the friends of the show, Brian, he's invited us out next weekend to his place, because he's going to be watching it on a Saturday afternoon when they simulcast it. So I'm going to head over there. And definitely watch it there.
Oh, it's EctoCon.
Who gives a shit?
Oh, jeez.
Are they going to have a really cool guest?
I don't know. Probably not.
Are they going to have a slime pit with, like,
maybe
naked chicks
oh,
and,
I should,
and
I need
proton
to see,
packs fighting?
we need to get on that.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, so if you're not going to watch it on the simulcast, you can watch it Monday
in
the theater.
And I may do both if it's really cool and I like it enough on Saturday when I go watch it. I might try and see about getting a ticket on Monday to see it as well. But I did watch all of the Doctor Who series, all the finished the Hill Matt Smith run, all the way even up to the 6-minute prequel little episode that they had Paul McGann, the Eighth Doctor, leading up to his regeneration and to the John Hurt Doctor, which is known as War Doctor.
Mm-hmm. The Warrior, War Doctor. Yeah, they have
in the credits. He's listed as War Doctor.
Yeah, I know, but they keep changing that because originally it was just the Doctor. Now it's the War Doctor, but in the documentary they call him the Warrior. Or that documentary, Jesus, man, look at me going all crazy. In the six minute prequel episode, they call him the Warrior at one point. So Warrior. it's all very in flux, I think, on what they're really going to call him.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of interesting where they, because if you haven't seen this little 6-minute clip,
pause it and go watch it.
Yeah.
It's only six minutes.
For those people who are lazy like me and are too lazy just to pause it for a moment and do this,
we'll talk real slow.
We'll talk you through it. Basically, Paul McGann shows up upon this spaceship. This girl's calling for help. They need
crashing. Spaceship's crashing.
You know, and Paul McGann shows up and is like, I'm the Doctor and I'm going to get you out of here or whatever.
Well, and it's also some sort of like warship. It's like a gunship.
Yeah,
because she calls it, it's like, you know, how do you get to be commander of a gunner on like a whatever Siberian like gunship or something?
Yeah, and so she's like, all right, and he's like, I'll get you out of here. And she gets back and she sees the TARDIS, and he says, don't worry, it's bigger on the inside. And she's like, you're a Time Lord.
She has like a freak out.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, but I'm not with them. And he says, I'm kind of on my own. And she says, you know, you and the Daleks are all the same. She's like, I'd rather fucking go down with my ship.
Well, yeah, it's like pretty much at this point, she's had the whole look like it's just better to die now than get in with this guy.
Yeah, she's like, I'm done. And he's like, well, I'm not leaving here without you. She goes, well, then I guess you're going to die on this ship. Who cares? You know? And the ship goes down on this planet and crashes, and she dies. And these Time Lord women who run this little coven.
It's the sisters of Karn, and apparently they were one of the they were in with the Fourth Doctor for a while. Like, I was reading a little bit about it. Like, I don't even remember this episode, but apparently the fourth Doctor had like a run in with them, and they were like trying to like live forever, and they had like some sort of Time Lord elixir, and apparently this is a long running thing that's just kind of like so. Stephen Moffat like pulled it out of the Doctor Who lore.
Okay,
yeah,
I had no idea who they were. But these women have basically gone through and they've studied the Time Lord regeneration so in depth that they have created these multitude of elixirs that can cause a Time Lord to regenerate at will to whatever form they wish.
Mm-hmm.
They can regenerate to a man or a woman. They can regenerate young or old. And they can even bring out personality traits that they particularly need. And she says, what this war needs right now is a warrior with your mind, basically. And he's like, I chose my name and I call myself the Doctor because I'm here to help people. And they go, we know that that's why you do this in the name of the Doctor, you know, type of deal. But that's not what the universe needs. They need you to be the warrior. And so he's kind of grudgingly convinced by these women to do it, so he tells them to leave and he apologizes kind of like as in like an open prayer type of thing to all the people he's traveled with.
Well, and the interesting thing is, and this is that this is kind of exciting everyone and the fluff lawyers on Doctor Who, you know, all the people that enjoy all the little, is that, you know, McGann, he has like the most stories of like any doctor,
right?
Even though he's only ever appeared like in any visual form twice, like the 90s TV movie and this internet show is the only two times he's appeared on film as the Doctor. But he has had all these adventures on the Big Finish audio productions.
Right.
Where, and it's like, apparently it's like a very in-depth, like he's had multiple companions, and there's like a whole story arc for him. Where, and I'm guessing he has been doing the voice of the Doctor, you know.
So I've checked it out, and he's done a lot of them.
Yeah, and so, and apparently when he was like doing his thing, he was calling out all the companions that he had had in the Big Finish production, so now people are going, oh, that means all this stuff is now canon. You know, it's not like this other thing over here. It's now all part of the lore of the Doctor. And then the other thing I thought was interesting is right before he grabbed the elixir, he kind of grabbed, like, because the woman that you know, the was Karen or whatever her name was, like, she had, like, this warrior outfit.
Yeah.
And he kind of grabbed, like, her like, ammunition belt or whatever. Yeah. It was like a bandolier. And that was kind of, like, the first piece of his costume for the new Doctor.
Right. Yeah, after he regenerates, he grabs that bandolier, and then you catch a reflection of kind of a young John Hurt.
Yep.
Not necessarily, like, young John Hurt, but he's not as quite as old as we saw him at in the Name of the Doctor.
Which is supposed to lead you to believe that, like, the Time War like was so long that the Doctor actually, like, you never really ever see Doctor Who age that much, but implying that this lasted so long that that even a Time Lord aged.
Right. And so it'll be kind of interesting to see what in 90 minutes they're going to pull off on
Saturday. You know, and Tina and I were discussing this, and it's like we're actually kind of like excited now, like after, you know, we have the special, that, you know, all the Time War stories that can start coming out now, that you have John Hurt established and this canon established, you know, can big, you know, admittedly, you know, there may never be a Time War Doctor series like that, may never be something that happens, but the big Finish productions, I can foresee them doing a ton of stories of Doctor Who and the time War,
right.
You know, with John Hurt now as the Doctor and his adventures, misadventures, what have you.
It'll be interesting, and I tell you the truth, Paul McGann looked pretty good.
Oh, he was awesome.
And I thought that, you know, you could definitely almost do a web-only series of live-action Paul McGann's kind of like leading up to the time, to the point that you saw him in this little 6-minute clip. And, you know, I think that would be amazing.
Yeah, they really kind of toned down his costume. He was a lot more polished as the Doctor. That was because Tina and I watched the 90s TV special recently within the last few weeks. I got it off of eBay.
Right.
You can get it in Blu-ray now. And yay! It was awesome. Uh-huh. And the TV movie, if you haven't seen it since, I think I've seen it one other time since it came out. Oh my god, that thing aged horribly. Like I mean, there are episodes of Doctor Who from the 80s that look better than this looks.
Wow,
it's like it just had. And I think what it is, it was very 90s. It's like it's, you know what I mean. It's not as timeless as some of the other Doctor Who stuff. It is very much rooted in its time.
Yeah,
And it's not bad. They were definitely trying, like you can tell, like some of the new Doctors, they tried some of that stuff was tested out with the Eighth Doctor, like some of those ideas they had to make him a little more, not sexy, but he, like, you know, it's the first time the Doctor had ever kissed a woman, you know, so forth and whatnot. You know, they were trying to update the character a little bit.
And the thing is, it's like, I think one of the things that needs to happen with the character to some degree is he does need to be updated, you know. And that's one of the great things about the Doctor is that he can constantly kind of be refreshed into new personas and characters. And while you can keep, you know, the history in the mind of the character, the new person gets to bring whatever they're going to do to it.
I am so ready for Peter Capaldi.
It's
just sitting, I'm like sitting here, like, I'm all excited about the 50th anniversary, and I'm excited about the Christmas special coming up. But it's like, there's part of me that's like, come on.
So he's
Give me to Peter Capaldi.
He's not going to regenerate at the end of this episode.
No, apparently it's, you're going to, so you get an hour and a half 50th anniversary special.
Right.
That is David Tennant, Matt Smith, John Hurt.
Right.
You get Rose.
Right.
Comes back. You get Pixie Girl, Clara.
Right.
Is in there. Think that's it. Now I may be mistaken, but I want to say that though they're the main players, and so you're going to deal with that, and then you're going to go to the Christmas special, which has already been filmed, that will air at Christmas, and that at the end of that is where you get Matt Smith regenerating into Peter Capaldi, Doctor. Okay. And then they are writing, have written, in the process of producing next season, which will start filming sometime in the spring to come out, you know, next summer.
Right.
Or in the, the late winter to come out next spring or whatever they're doing. So they're trying to blow through all this 50th anniversary stuff and then get to Peter Capaldi and then kind of start. And I am so ready, like, because I feel with him being a little bit older that you're going to get, I'm imagining a third, fourth Doctor combination, somebody a little more gravity. Like, yeah. You know, because, yeah, you understand what I'm kind of saying, right? Like, a little, right. Yeah.
Yeah. I tell you what, I there's a point where I kind of disagree with something you had said, like, on one of our previous
that
things.
Is, that isn't allowed to happen.
About River Song.
Yeah.
I don't really think that they're done with her.
You know what, the reason I said that is because you that, is, it. That is what I've heard from Stephen Moffat.
Yeah,
is
don't even know how that's possible.
I actually agree. I think
I'm just like,
yeah, no,
how can you just drop her? They're married. You know,
yeah,
they.
I know.
They're like, their thing. She's like, met future him.
Like, I would love for River Song to be a companion with the Doctor for a while.
Yeah.
Like I think that'd be awesome. And it's like, because to me, River Song almost comes off as like, while they are in love and married and whatever, she can come off as almost times as like a mentoring figure to like the Doctor, like a little bit.
Yeah.
Where, you know, where I would love to see them like, toe to toe.
She is kind of like this, a really well done superhero's wife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She comes in and it's just like, you know, you can't be alone.
Yeah.
I will stay with you until you find someone to travel with, because you can't be alone, and we are not always going to be together.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and if you know, she works very well in the capacity that she's in love with him. She has her own adventure. She does her own thing. Mm-hmm. But when she comes into play, she holds some gravity, which is one of the things I was kind of concerned about when they were going to bring her in. And they brought her in with Tennant, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is one
and one of my favorite episodes, Silence in the
Library. And I was kind of like, when they first brought her in, she's all like, hey, and I was like, oh, Jesus, here it comes. Mm-hmm. There's this character. Just loud and bombastic, trying to be, you know, like the Doctor. But then she kind of got into this mode where she's like, I'd do anything for him. He's the savior of the universe. Oh, my God. And it's just like, all right, where's that coming from? But then they develop her into her own character to where you kind of understand things. Mm-hmm. And you're like, all right. And I kind of like where they've done with her character. I like how, you know, I liked Amy and Rory. I know that you guys weren't as big on Amy and Rory as I was.
Well, you know, Amy and Rory were really cool for a while, but I started to grow tired of them. It's like, it very much seems like Matt Smith cannot exist without Rory and Amy.
Well, yeah, the thing is with Matt Smith is that his Doctor is handicapable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to use the word handicapped, but he is definitely not a Doctor in what we've come to know the Doctor to be, which is someone who is capable of handling things on his own.
Yeah.
This is a Doctor that relies greatly on his companions
mm-hmm.
to see things through and to help him, you know, solve these mysteries or to even take the bull by the horns and fix them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could probably count the number of times that he's done it on one hand.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many episodes where he's traveling with winds up basically saving the day,
and that's one of the best episodes with him is the one where there are two Amys, where the one Amy grows right. older, where that's one of the only times Matt Smith has ever had to like have a reckoning of what, because it's like Matt Smith is kind of like floating through life as like this fairy tale character, like, oh yay, fix things and then deal with the bad guys, and then suddenly it's like no. What you do has consequences in the future, and meet one of these consequences is, you know, you have left her here, and now you have to leave this alternate version Amy in an alternate timeline future where she has like had to be alone,
right?
Because you weren't paying attention.
Yeah, I liked the episode with where Amy and Rory left with the angels or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Although the Statue of Liberty angel, while neat looking,
it was
how it made it through the city, I have no
idea. You know, it's all like just like in Ghostbusters. You start singing, it just walks down the middle of the street.
Yeah,
you
know, but it was a really interesting episode, and it was kind of a surprise when mm-hmm. Rory just got sucked into the past,
yeah.
and then you know Amy basically gives herself over mm-hmm. and gets sucked back with him, and you know it's was definitely a toll to be taken on him at that point. I thought that was a really interesting exit for those characters. And
so let me ask you: so what do you think of Clara? Like Tina and I have very strong opinions about Clara.
She's trying. It's hard to judge a companion when mm-hmm. they're with Matt Smith because the companions are required with being with the Matt Smith doctor to pick up so much of the slack.
Yeah.
That at this point she just kind of comes across like I don't know, not quite Amy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's not as brash and you know, in your face as Amy was. But she's, you know, she's just kind of this little bubbly, jovial
mm-hmm.
girl that is suddenly an amazing hacker, and she, you know, she's just kind of like this adventurous young woman. She's kind of like, what's her name? The one that you and Claire.
Oh, Donna.
She's kind of like Donna, but bubbly.
You know, and I think
she's
part of my
really
problem,
excited to be traveling with the doctor.
Part of the problem I have with Clara is not the actress's fault, and maybe not the character's fault, but it's like they tried to cram what should have been a whole season of story arc into half a season.
It didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I didn't have a huge reaction to like as you guys did. It's just like, okay, so she climbed into his time stream, his time hole. And went back, and she helped him at certain points in his life.
But you know what? That should have been a huge event. You have somebody that has now interjected themselves into the doctor's timeline.
Well, I think,
it just sort of became like, oh yeah, this happened,
and then the guy jumped in.
And the doctor jumped in his own time hole, which
and then undid everything that she did, and then he jumped into his own time stream to go get her. And I don't really know what that represents.
Yeah, and then he winds up meeting himself, and it's like that's kind of what I. It's like I'm hoping with as we move forward, that not so much of the 50th anniversary. I think you're going to find out very little about Clara, and I think maybe even the Christmas special, it's going to be all about Matt Smith becoming Peter Capaldi.
Yeah, it should.
But I'm hoping next season. Because they're going to keep Clara around for a little while, you know. She is definitely going to get a few seasons at least. That
probably at least another one.
She actually develops into like a character and not a plot device. Because it's like
I didn't really kind of see her as the plot device that kind of maybe you saw her as, but just more than anything, it was just like she was just like this weird little mystery.
Mm-hmm.
That really wasn't all that amazingly well explained.
Yeah,
maybe the day of the doctor will explain it better.
Yeah.
You know?
What's funny
is the evil bad guy
mm-hmm.
that jumped in and erased...
The great intelligence.
That guy was part of a comedy special that they did for, I think it was... not Just for Laughs, but Comic Relief.
Oh, yeah.
They did Comic mm-hmm. Relief Britain a few... Well, probably 10 years ago at this point, longer.
Just a few years
ago. It was a long time ago, but he played the doctor in one of the comic...
Funny.
It started off with Rowan Atkinson as the doctor, and then at some point, they had some girl playing like a Sarah Jane type character.
Yeah.
And Rowan Atkinson is just like, da-da-da-da, and she goes, how do you know that doctor? He goes, I'll explain it to you later. And that was his kind of his catch thing, is he explained it all later. And, you know, they were fighting Daleks or whatever, and then like, at one point, Rowan Atkinson gets zapped, and then he becomes that guy.
Oh.
And he comes out, and he's all, like, stylish, and like, hey, what's up, you know? And he's like, you know, he's in love with himself, and how, you know, young and hot mm-hmm. he looks, and everything like that. And this companion's like, oh, doctor or whatever, and something else happens, and then he gets shot by a Dalek again, and it regenerates again, and he comes out, and he's Hugh Grant.
Okay.
Yeah, he comes out and he's Hugh Grant, and it was pretty funny. You'd have to look it up. It's probably about a 10 or 15 minute long little skit that they did. But if you find it, put it up on the Nerdy Time site. Yeah. It's really worth watching. So yeah. So now that's coming up for Doctor Who. What do we got coming up beyond that? Anything else? I don't think there's
for Doctor Who.
I don't think there's much else even this year that I want to see.
Yeah, it's like, well, we're coming up on the end of the year.
Yeah.
So it's getting to Christmas, it's like, and movies are going to start sucking for a little while, because nobody wants to release anything ahead of the Oscar. Well, you'll probably get a bunch of movies that'll try to get, like indie films will try to get released to try to get in qualified for the Oscars.
Yeah.
You might get some re-releases of movies that aired or premiered earlier in the year that want to get into Oscar contention.
Pacific Rim.
Yeah, for shittiest for the Raspberries.
No, the movie was amazing.
Yeah, it was amazingly bad.
You're terrible.
So
you like that movie?
Yeah, whatever.
I do
like it a little bit, but I don't like it as much as that movie.
Whatever.
But I like more is messing with you about
it.
Yeah, so yeah, it's like I think, and as far as like TV goes, it's like, you know, we're talking about Amazon. It's like they authorized Alpha House, which was the John Goodman TV show with the four Republican senators, blah 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 blah. But the reason I kind of bring that up is that they had like a science fictiony like Red Dwarf meets Star Wars kind of. And like animated show, and it's like I don't know if they're going to greenlight that one, but I'm kind of curious now that they've greenlit one,
right?
Like what else from those? And then they greenlit a couple of the children shows that they had previewed, but I'm curious like what other shows are going to get greenlit in the upcoming months to be made into TV series for Amazon. And if you're on Amazon Prime, you can watch Alpha House now. I think there's like four episodes up.
Yeah,
you know, so yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's kind of like I want to say a golden age, but it's like a lot of shows now are going to get made that would not have gotten made because it would not be mainstream enough,
right?
But as long as they get enough audience, Amazon, Netflix, Hulu are going to start producing their own content now, like you were talking about,
right? The Marvel stuff.
So I'm kind of interested to see what is all going to get. You know, Captain Worf
could be a Hulu
exclusive there.
Be amazing.
So yeah, so I posted on the if you're not following us on Facebook, you should, because Corey and I like throw out a few times a day little tidbits of stuff we find on the internet. And one of the things I uncovered was an update to an article from like a year or two ago about a new Star Trek TV series called Captain Worf that was supposed to follow the Worf character as a captain of a Federation ship, and you know, hilarity ensues. You know, and so I know that would make Corey happy because Worf was one of his favorite characters from Next Generation and Deep Space Nine.
I haven't even gotten to him on Deep Space
Nine. Oh, really? I stopped
watching Deep Space Nine. I've not gotten through it.
Wow,
it's that bad. Yeah, Worf. If you're a fan of Star Trek and you've not watched the Next Generation shows or any of that stuff, Worf is the only character in the Next Generation universe really that has a well-developed story arc.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Other than that, I mean,
everyone else is like, it's bad. We could have a whole podcast about that.
But just to keep that short, I mean, he really starts off kind of as a background character. Yeah. Just there is there's a Klingon on the bridge. Yeah. And then,
even truly so, he was like when it started off, he was only supposed to be in like a handful of episodes.
Yeah, he was in it. Yeah,
and then he became regular. Yeah.
Then he became security chief, and then he went up in rank, and he became father,
and he had a kid, and married,
and it was just there was this whole development of a character there that pretty much doesn't happen with anybody else on that show. There is some. Don't get me wrong, and you Trekkies can like rip my head off about it, but
and you're wrong.
There are some other developments, but nobody is as well developed in a character story arc as Worf. So it seems kind of natural that he would be considered for a series because he's got so much history.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, and you know, this is going to be one of those things where it's caught in the Hollywood development system.
I don't expect it to ever see it. This was the first time I'd ever heard of it.
But I think one of the reasons it keeps coming up because every time Michael Dorn, the actor that played Worf, is in a movie or does anything or acts, you know, he's been saying that like directors and producers and other, you know, people will come up to him and goes, hey, if this Captain Worf thing ever comes up, you need to call me,
right?
Because they want to direct, they want to help produce, they, you know, there's people that are interested in doing it,
right?
So if things percolate long enough, it's gonna get, you know what I mean? And that's why, you know.
And it might be interesting to have him be older and a little more seasoned, you know, and not like, because in the Next Generation shows, he was really the muscle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was the security chief, and he went on to Deep Space Nine where he was an ambassador. But, you know, and now it might be interesting to kind of see him get into as an older Klingon, get into the captain's chair and all that kind of stuff. And
yeah, I think, you know, and there has been talk about Paramount wanting to produce another Star Trek show, that they feel that, like, the palate has been cleansed from what they consider the flop of Enterprise, which I don't think is as bad as some people think it was.
It was just oversaturation.
They got greedy.
I tell you the truth, everything that they did from Voyager to Enterprise, the first season or so of Enterprise is so-so, but the last 2.5 seasons of Enterprise are amazing.
Yeah.
And Voyager is probably my favorite series of all.
Yeah, so now the palate's been cleansed, and you've had some new movies that have re-sparked interest, and then, like, Simon Pegg and Chris Pine are not going to do a Star Trek TV series. Their careers would
have to take a nosedive straight into hell.
So your Star Trek is either going to be the next generation,
right,
or Captain Worf, or some combination thereof shoehorned in there.
You know, and I think that what would maybe be an interesting concept for a Star Trek show going forward would be maybe, instead of following a single ship, is to follow a universe.
Oh, okay.
Is to set the story within a universe and have key characters kind of take place in this universe. So you have Captain Worf, maybe it's the Federation side of it, and then maybe you bring in some of the elder cultures just a little bit. So that maybe you're following two separate starships or something, so that, you know, this story has room to expand, and you don't get into that whole flaw of like, oh well, everybody's going to come back from this mission, you know, every week. You know, it's like, how are they going to get through this week? You know, now it's a story you could, if you did it kind of from a universe take, because that's what Star Trek is a huge universe of different cultures and races and stuff like that. You know, just kind of bounce around in the universe a little bit, you know, maybe have a story take place on a planet, have one take part on a starship, and, you know, these characters interact, and, you know, it'd be interesting if you could flesh it all out. So, do you have a Kickstarter for us, Dan?
I do, and since we're hitting, like, over an hour, I think the Serenity stuff we wanted to talk about, let's hold on to that to next week. We have some Serenity
stuff. For 101... Get ready for Firefly Serenity.
Woo! So I have, dovetailing into that, I have a Kickstarter for a Firefly USB flash drive Kickstarter. It's a collectible, so it's going to be a die-cast metal flash drive.
Okay.
So a little bit more than just your chintzy plastic. And there's a company that I've not heard of, but now that I've seen this Kickstarter, I kind of like looked at some of their previous projects. They did a Voltron
USB
key. They did a Gigantor US from like a heavy metal Gigantor USB drive. They did, what do you got here? A licensed. And this is the other thing. This is also a licensed product. You know, they're not going to get shut down.
I think we saw the Voltron USB key.
We did. And then
there was at the St. Louis Comic Con. And it was neat looking.
Yeah. So, and this company, Incubot. Is well known for these types of things. This thing is not going to be cheap. You're not buying this because you need an 8 gig USB drive.
Right.
You need an 8 gig USB drive. You need to go down to Walgreens and pick up an eight dollar thing.
Right.
So this thing is going to cost about $45 on the Kickstarter, but it's, you know, die cast metal. It's going to have lights. It's going to be all cool. Here, and I'll show Corey, you know, they got pictures of some of their other USB keys that they've done.
Does it have the Firefly one in here?
Let's see that.
The Gigantors look pretty neat, though.
That's their production template model. So it's not going to be huge. No, you know, that's a little pricey. It's a collectible.
It would be collectible.
Like I said, it looks pretty cool. They got, you know, they have some like some schematics. There's a little video I'll post in the show notes, and you can watch their little video. But this company has produced a number of these, so they are not a fly by night operation.
Well, let's talk about a little bit of its design here. A pressing the button ejects the USB chip, which I guess is going to be the
Yeah, you'll press the button. What I take that to be is like it's kind of like on some computers you have to eject the USB drive, you know, so it'll disconnect properly. So it'll have like a hardware button for that.
Yep. Whenever you plug it in, it's going to light up the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And when you're done, you push the connection port back into the ship, which will relock it. So yeah, sounds pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And it's like, and I am tempted. And I don't know if I'm going to do this or not because I'm still paying off a bathroom remodel.
The kerfuffle.
The kerfuffle fest. But for $140, you will get an exclusive Founders version of the flash drive with a commemorative box, and a sticker, and a Voltron Grenadier and Nikobot flash drive. So they give you like a selection of their.
Oh, well, that would be interesting. Because like the Voltron flash drive at Comic-Con, I was kind of interested in. I was new. I think it was 2 gigs or 4 gigs.
Yeah, it was small.
It was small, but it was coming. It was coming loaded with some Voltron episodes and some other stuff. And I was like, yeah, all right, you know. And I was thinking it's probably gonna be like $20-25. It was $45.
Yeah. Yeah, these guys, you know, specialize in collectible level flash drives.
Yeah,
it's either one of those things you kind of carry around, and your friends go, "Oh, that's so cool! I love that flash drive." Yeah. Or it sits on your shelf as like my micro machines do. You know,
right.
They only rarely get played with.
But sometimes
that's what happens. What did you see? I didn't see you play with your dolls again, sir.
Christmas Eve, Dan's underneath the tree.
That's right.
With his micro machines and his Transformers, box of Transformers.
It's bad.
Reliving youthful joys.
And Corey is not lying when he says I have a box of Transformers.
I know. My son plays with them.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So I think we have given you a full. And I think we can even preview what we'll talk about next week because there has been some. There's a new Firefly RPG coming out. Firefly board game that Corey and I have both played and thoroughly enjoyed. There's a lot of Firefly stuff, and just relates back to our earlier about Joss Whedon.
Right.
I think what has happened now that Joss Whedon is like super famous and is known for like one of the best superhero movies ever produced.
Right.
That everyone is like. Dusting around in the back of their cupboards for anything that's got Joss Whedon name on it, because I have noticed, you know, Tina Sabi is a huge fan of like Buffy,
right?
And has lamented for a while that there was not a lot of Buffy stuff,
right?
Suddenly, like this last year, we've been going to conventions. There are lunch boxes. There is jewelry,
right?
Like there is a ton of licensed material out there for Buffy, and I think the same thing's happened with Serenity and Firefly because Fox. Was notoriously and unaccountably stingy with their licensing of Firefly. It's like they just didn't want anyone to know they even had it, which I thought was so dumb. It's like these companies were coming to them saying, "We have money. You know, understand? We're going to give you money,
right?
You know, do you not want money?" And they were like, "No." And it was like that was so hard. That was why it was so hard to get Jane hats for so long. Even the original Serenity Firefly game after the first year. Fox wanted to pull the license, and they're like, "No, we send you a check. Like, do you not want to keep getting checks?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, Margaret Weiss Productions couldn't even understand that. So there's obviously been, like, people have gone, oh, we can make money off Joss Whedon.
Right.
So that's a discussion for next week. Hopefully I'll have a chance to download some of the preview material and read through the new Cortex Plus, you know, system and all that. So, all right, Corey. So if people wanted to reach us, if they don't already know, after 100 episodes, 100, woo, party!
I'll tell you what, if we get to 200, mm-hmm. I'm going to build a giant laser and carve all this information into the face of the moon.
Well, you know what, our current rate, that technology may actually become available.
Okay.
You know, in 3055.
Yeah.
So, Corey, how would these people get a hold of us?
They just walk up to us and give us a big hug.
Oh, okay. And if you wanted to know where to find us to give a big hug, where would they go?
Dan's house.
Oh, that's true. And you can find the address to Dan's house at
www.wheredoesdanlive.com.
I better make sure that doesn't exist. The website is at nerdytimes.com.
We are on Facebook at Facebook/TheNerdyTimes.
Follow us on Facebook. You know, we don't post so much on the weekends, but during the week.
We have other jobs, but we don't do them.
Yeah, that's true.
We just post to
reserve the internet.
You can also email us at info@nerdytimes.com. Yes. And we are on Twitter at TheNerdyTimes.
Yes.
So,
get a hold of us.
Get a hold of us.
Like us on iTunes. Give us a rating on iTunes.
Yeah.
Visit the website.
Do all those things.
Like us on Facebook.
Buy our 100th anniversary t-shirt.
That's right. When we have one of those, we'll let you know.
We'll let you know that those will be flying off shelves.
But I think, Corey, like, we appreciate everyone that has followed us through, like, the crazy weird adventure of like changing websites and addresses earlier this year.
Yep.
Everyone that has found us, all people at, you know, Contamination and Conglomeration and the Science Center.
We do have a few more Contamination interviews left. There's just a handful. I don't know exactly.
There may be a Nerdy Time special edition that comes out.
Why don't we just tag them on the end of here?
Oh, okay. We'll do that.
So it'll be a surprise to everyone.
Oh!
So here it is. We're going to finish it out. This is Dan and Corey saying have a great week and enjoy the end of the Contamination interviews.
Goodbye! We love you guys.
Hello, everybody. This is Corey, and I'm here with Mr. Alex Vincent. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about how you got into the entertainment business.
I was auditioning in New York City when I was a kid, when I was 5 till about 13, 14, 3 or 4 times a week, driving from New Jersey into New York City, and just auditioning for a bunch of different things. And then in 1987, I booked the role of Andy in Child's Play, and now 25 years later, I can be in St. Louis and among many other cities to sign autograph photos for something that I did 25 years ago that fans still appreciate. So it was pretty fortunate.
Yeah, it was a crazy film. I remember seeing it when it came out and everything. And can you tell us a little bit about your experience working on both films?
It was fun. It was a fun thing for a kid to do. I was pretty aware of what the concept of the film was, and I had complete awareness that the doll was not really trying to kill me, so there was nothing intimidating about it. It was just a fun experience.
Okay. What have you been doing beyond the Child's Play?
I've done a few things since. I've done a couple acting projects, things that are coming out at the end of this year. I just made a film that I wrote, and then I act in. I did the audio mix and the original scoring for it as well. It's a thriller, low-budget thriller that we made in Florida called House Guest. And you can go to facebook.com/houseguest2013. And the trailer's up online, and the DVDs are going to be for sale in September. We're supposed to show it this weekend, hopefully. So.
Okay. Everybody gets to see all the stuff that goes on the screen, of course. But what happens behind the scenes? Do you have a favorite from your career, behind-the-scene moment, something that you could share with us?
I feel like the appropriate answer to that would be something that from the Child's Play films, and I was pretty young to have any real memories of behind-the-scenes things that happened that were extraordinary or story-worthy.
I mean, it doesn't have to be from Child's Play, just any part.
Just a behind-the-scenes.
Something that stands out.
Will this do?
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. Sorry about that.
Not a problem.
Thanks so much. I was making, not that this is a fun, exciting behind-the-scenes story, but it's interesting. When I was making Child's Play 2, we were in the scene with the lady who was running that orphanage place, and the camera lights had burnt through a large lamp fixture on the ceiling, and it fell and smashed over my head right in between takes.
Oh, that's
and they rushed me off like you know, they were asking me all questions, what's my name, where am I, and yeah, the glass exploded all over Andy's head.
Are you okay afterwards, I assume?
Yeah, I was fine, yeah.
All right. Well, where can people find you online? Where can they learn more about you?
I'm on Facebook, like the rest of the world, and I'm pretty easy to find there. But I have a website, which is alexvincentonline.com. My appearances are up there, along with some merchandise that you can purchase, autograph photos, and some audio work that I have, and some video work, and just updates on what I'm up to.
Well, I thank you for taking some time out of your day to talk to us. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks, Corey. I appreciate it, too.
Hello, everybody. This is Corey, and I'm here with John Carl Beekler. Welcome to the program, sir.
Hey, how you doing? Nice to see you.
Tell me a little bit about how you started your career.
Oh, golly wally. I've always been interested in movies, I guess, from the time I was 3 years old. I kind of knew what I wanted to do. I saw King Kong on television, a stop-motion animation masterpiece. And as a small child, you don't know what an actor does or what a writer does or what a director does or a special effects guy does, but I knew I wanted to do that. So I figured out how to do that, and I've been figuring it out ever since, I guess.
So tell me a little about what was your first project that you got to work on?
Wow, first project. I mean like when I was three or?
Like your first professional one.
First professional one. Well, the thing is, some of the labors of love became commerce later on. In college, I worked on a film directed by Richard Taylor called The Thing in the Basement. It was a short film. It was shot right around here. I went to school in Southern Illinois University, and he was part of the film department, and we shot movies on weekends. I played the thing in the basement, and that went on to be part of a horror anthology that actually was released and made some money. So I guess, in essence, that was one of the first professional movies that I've been in, but I mean, there are so many first movies.
Yeah. So you've done a lot of the special effects work, acting, writing, directing. Do you have a favorite part of the business that you like to do the most?
I like storytelling, and I guess directing movies and writing movies encapsulates the storytelling best. But then again, doing special effects and acting is part of the storytelling process. If you do it the way I do it, and that is, you know, you don't just think about your little niche, you think about the whole thing and how it affects all in the picture. I mean, if I'm hired to be an actor in a movie, I create a character with a backstory. I know the history of my character. I know the concerns of my character, and I participate in the process of moving the story forward. In much the way as I do as a special effects creator, you evolve the character based on the material. You figure out, is it bipedal? Does it have stereoscopic vision? Does it breathe? Is it aquatic? Does gravity affect it? You know, how many limbs does it have? All of these things help tell the story about the character that you're creating. And ultimately, back in the day before CGI, everything had to be done very practically, so you had to think about how you would actually make it work. You'd sculpt it, you'd mold it, you'd cast it, you'd mechanize it, you'd make it move, and you'd figure out how best to shoot it. You know, what angles it looked best from, how to light it, how to make it look perfect. And that in and of itself is a school in the sorts of teaching you how to tell a story. When you think about, even today, the practical effects versus CGI effects. I think there's a huge backlash now against CGI because it's It does look artificial. It doesn't look as real. It looks sort of like a moving matte painting, whereas when filmmakers were forced to work with practical effects, they had to be better filmmakers. They had to think about the cuts. They had to think about the dynamics of the sequence. They had to work very carefully on the best way to not just shoot it so it looks real, but how it affects the whole story. They had to focus on the dynamics. They had to focus on the tension. They were more visceral. They were more real. And what director would not want to have something real and live in front of him, as opposed to something that an animator will create a couple months later after he shoots a plate?
So having worked on so many different projects and everything, do you have a favorite story from all your years in working in film and all that? Just something to tell, like a behind-the-scenes type of moment?
Ooh, a favorite story. Golly. I don't know if I have any favorite stories that I can tell without getting people in trouble. This guy over here, a fellow named Kane Hodder, who he's been around movies as well for a little while. I directed him in a little movie called Friday the 13th Part 7, put him in the role of Jason, and he's become one of the most famous guys behind the mask that has ever been. And he is a joker on set. He is a joker at conventions. And some of the things he does, I can't repeat here. Why don't you talk to him?
I have talked to Kane Hodder, and he's actually come up on when I was doing interviews a few years ago here and walked up behind like the person I was interviewing and was like, ch-ch-ch-ch. And she's like, oh my God. You know, he is a practical joker.
When you go over to him, ask him to look at the little atomizer spray that he's spritzing people with.
I wouldn't mind it.
Sorry. That was Kane.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Thank you, guys.
So what are you working on currently?
I just wrapped a motion picture that I wrote and directed and produced called Wizard Dream, starring Malcolm McDowell. We're in post right now. And again, it's primarily a lot of live-action, practical, physical effects. We created a dragon, we have orcs, we have giants, we have witches and wizards. Even the visual effects were very, very practical. We shot forced perspective miniatures. The backgrounds of the skies are shot in a cloud tank. The fire that comes out of the dragon's mouth are live actions. The sparks and lightning bolts that come out of the wizard's hands are shot with electrostatic generators and sparklers to create matter that fizzles off. You know, creating all the elements live and practical and putting them together. It's not that I hate digital. It's not that I hate CGI. It's good, and it's a practical thing to work with. But for me, it's like an airbrush. It's a way to paste things together. It's a cut-and-paste technique. It's a way to get away from all the layering that you had to do with film. You know, it's there's the application of digital effects in concert with live-action physical effects, I think, yields the best product.
All right. Well, is there anywhere people can find you online to learn more about you and your projects?
I don't know. Somehow, social media picks up what I'm doing all the time. I know there's a Facebook fan page for Wizard Dream. I have another movie that's coming up. We're going to start prepping in the next month. It is called Hidden Valley: The Awakening. It is a coming-of-age werewolf movie. It's lots of fun. Check it out. There is a social media page on Facebook. There's you can find out about it. Just Google it or go into IMDb.
Well, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to talk to us. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Pleasure speaking to you. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm here with Mr. Tom Towles.
It's Towles, and you can correct anyone who mispronounces it as Towles and tell them that I said, no, it's Towles, you stupid motherfucker. And it has to be stated exactly that way.
All right.
Do you not know how to fucking read? I'm sorry. I went too far that time.
No.
Forgive me. Yes.
Tell us a little bit about how you got your start.
How I got my start. I just gotten out of the Marine Corps. I went to college on a scholarship at a place called Columbia College, a photography scholarship, because I'd been a photographer in the Marine Corps. And I had to take an elective. And I didn't know what it was, and there was a thing called music in the theater. And apparently that's where all the women were going. And I quite literally followed three or four women into this class, and they put on what they called rock cantatas on the weekend, which were basically all the students getting together and playing instruments around a very loosely assembled story. And I had a part in that. And the new director of the theater department saw me, and he said, "Have you ever thought about acting?" And I said, "No. Could I make a living at it?" He said, "I don't know. How the fuck should I?" But my scholarship went from photography to theater. And from that point on, I never went back to class. I was part of the Paul Sills Theater Company, and I started acting, and it's been all downhill ever since.
What was your first film? Tell us a little bit about it.
My first film, oh God, what was the title of it? It was, honestly, I can't remember. I had a very small part. It was a Chicago film. Pink Nights, that's what it was called. Pink Nights, and it might have been K-N-I-G-H-T, but I can't be sure. And you know, you begin to think, Pink Nights? Oh, anyway, I'm digressing. And I had a really small part in that, and that was all while I was still doing theater in Chicago. Then the next film after that, wait, let me correct that. My very first film was Dog Day Afternoon. I had gone to New York to do a Broadway show that closed, and I was floating around, and they were casting extras for Dog Day Afternoon. That's right. That was my first film. I was 70-something, so it preceded Pink Nights by several years. And I got lucky enough to get on that, and that was like hanging out in Brooklyn in October, pretending it was August. You know, it was freezing. So if you ever see Dog Day Afternoon, the crowd shots, everybody's there waving their arms in short sleeves. Behind that crowd is a massive pile of coats, because you get the call, "All right, everybody, take off your coats and get ready." So that's what would happen. You just throw your coat behind it, then the camera would pan. But I did get a chance to talk to Sidney Lumet, and that's where I first met Lance Henriksen. And he and I got a chance to work together years and years later in Italy. It was a very interesting bonding experience around a very bizarre little motion picture. Anyway.
Cool. So I have noticed that you were in Firefly, which is probably one of my favorite shows ever on television. It's a shame that it didn't get to go any further. But I just had to mention that. Did you? I knew you're sure your part in the beginning was sure you were with the Malcolm Reynolds character and getting into a bar fight.
Yes. For me, Firefly was great, primarily because I got to meet Nathan and that entire crew, but more because I got an actual chance to audition for Josh Whedon, who had blown me away with everything that he'd done in creating the TV series Buffy. Not just, you know, the original Buffy. It's a phenomenal idea. But the TV series, the all-singing Buffy episode, the all-silent Buffy episode. I thought was television expressing its potential. You know, something really unique that you can't really find anywhere else. And he's the source of this. Then, of course, he comes up, and I got a chance to tell him that. And that was more important to me than almost anything else. And he had fortunately or unfortunately seen a movie I did years ago when he was younger called The Borrower. And he liked it, so I got the job.
Well, there you go.
No, that was the best part. That was the best part.
So you've done a lot of different films and everything. Do you have a favorite behind-the-scenes story from your career? Something that really just stands out, like something funny or seedy or whatever?
Behind-the-scenes stuff. That's generally stuff I will keep to myself. The most interesting story I can tell is auditioning for Steven Seagal. And that's going into the lot at Warner Brothers. I think it was Warner Brothers. Anyway, he had his office. We were there for the audition. It was awful for both of us. But as I'm going out, I said, look, man, I've never seen anybody handle a firearm on screen the way you do. Not since Steve McQueen died. I mean, you really know what you're doing. And he said, oh, you a 45 guy? I said, yeah. And he reaches into the small of his back and pulls out his 45, drops the magazine, pops the chamber, the round out of the chamber, and says, here, check this out. This is my gun.
Just walking around with it
in his, you know, in a little holster in the small of his back.
Note to self, if you ever see Steven Seagal, do not taunt him. He might shoot you.
Yes. It's a very distinct possibility.
So tell us, what do you got coming up? What are some of the things you're working
on now? I don't act that much anymore. I got William Forsythe is putting together a thing that he wants to shoot in September, a little independent film, which is this moment. It's a revenger's tragedy in the classic Jacobean sense of everybody gets killed. You know, you go in and you just madness. And that should be interesting, but I'm not enthused by it anymore. I don't have to do anything that I don't want to do. And I really enjoy writing these days, and that's what I'm doing. And I don't even write scripts or screenplays. It's novels and short stories. You know,
I do a lot of writing. I do audiobooks and that kind of thing. I record them and all that. What do you like to write?
I like to write aggressive, mean, and nasty stuff. I like to write, you know, I have one story that is the decimation of New York from the point of Godzilla. I have another one about an audition that I'm sitting in for a horror movie and everybody's screaming. That's another one I'll tell you about. But, no. It's whatever tempts me at the moment. You know, I finished a novel that's a police procedural. It hasn't been published. I've had it edited, and it's available. But if you don't send your stuff out, it's not going to get rejected.
Right.
So, you know, I'm avoiding rejection. That's, you know, writing is fun. Acting used to be massive amounts of fun. And it's not quite the fun it used to be. When I work with my friends like Bill and Bill Forsythe and, you know, the guys I love, the guys that I get along with, that's fun. And I don't have to do anything that I don't want to do anymore. And I like that.
That's an important thing.
It is.
Well, I'd like to thank you for taking some time out of your day here at Contamination to talk to us. I really appreciate it. It's been very special.
It's my great pleasure. I can ramble on about almost anything.
Land shark.